Ellie Cook is a musician, a concert promoter, but above all, she's a mother. And we're talking to her about her role as a mother today, in particular, her role as the mother of a now 28-year-old son who was severely impacted after he had a COVID vaccine. Ellie, great to talk with you again. We have conversed before here on RCR, and we mentioned your son's story then. But there have been many developments in the year or so since we last chatted. So first, let's have the backstory. I understand he was 26 when he was first vaccinated, and it didn't take long, Ellie, before he was badly affected by it. Tell us about his story.
Yeah, he was mandated by Move Logistics, who were a trucking company, and they did not a government mandate, of course, just a company mandate. So he was forced to go and get it. He didn't want to go and get it. He went to Cromwell because he was based out of Cromwell and he got vaccinated. He was never told at the time that myocarditis or pericarditis was a risk, and even though the Ministry of Health knew at the time. He was vaccinated and 6 hours later, he was driving a 56-ton truck down State Highway 1 when he started to get chest pains and couldn't breathe. He called Healthline, who called the ambulance and took him to Ashburton Hospital. The doctor leaned over him there as he came in while he was on the hospital gurney and said, "Don't let this put you off your second shot," while he couldn't breathe, before they'd even put a stethoscope on him. They discharged him and said that it was anxiety. The next day, with chest pain, he went back into Christchurch Hospital. Again, he was the doctor said it was an immune reaction. They discharged him without medication. The 2 days later, his own doctor cleared him to drive back to the Lakes, and he went to Queenstown Hospital, who, again, with chest pain, and they discharged him. A year later, he had chest pain on and off, and he would just keep swallowing Nurofen, you know, typical truck driver not really running off to the doctor. Then it got really bad on Christmas Eve. He spent the following Christmas Eve, a year later, he spent his Christmas Eve in Nelson Hospital. And then he tried to go down to Twizel for New Year's Eve, and he got as far as Geraldine and said to his mates, "I've got chest pain," on New Year's Eve. And he spent his New Year's Eve back in Ashburton Hospital a year later. And then in October last year, he was in hospital. So he's been all the way through. We were waiting for a referral to a cardiologist in Nelson Hospital. And then we discovered that the referral had disappeared off the system. And then when we finally did get to a cardiologist, we went privately in the end because we were fighting ACC over it. And the cardiologist said, "I can't access your ECGs at Ashburton. I can't access them at Christchurch. I can't access them at Queenstown." She said, "I don't want reports. I want to see your ECGs." So I went on a hunt and found that the hospital had lost his ECGs and his blood tests. Not one hospital, but three. And
that was deliberate? You believe that was deliberate?
I don't know. I've started an investigation at all of the hospitals under the Privacy Act, because hospitals are required to keep your records for 10 years. They're not supposed to lose your test results, but not one, but three. Anyway, they ended up going to the hard archive in Christchurch and they found an ECG, which we then got to the cardiologist, which showed ST elevations and PR depressions. So we now know that the day after my son's vaccine, he had pericarditis. He was discharged. He was misdiagnosed. And discharged without medication.
Ellie, tell us what those abbreviations mean. You talked ST.
Yeah, so they're on an ECG and they're called ST elevations and PR depressions. You know, I mean, I'm not a doctor. You know, the little squiggly lines that go up and down and it's an indication that's in there. So what I've learned from this is it needs a trained eye to look at those. So a cardiologist can look at an ST elevation or PR depression, they can pick that and they know what they're looking at, whereas normal doctors don't necessarily pick that up. So that's what I'm thinking. But the most important lesson learned out of it is I want anyone out there that was fobbed off, that had chest pain, to go and lay your hands on the actual physical ECG. First, I want to find that people's ECGs haven't disappeared. And secondly, I want them to take their ECGs and get to a cardiologist and have the cardiologist look at the ECG.
Right.
So it's very, very important.
Right. So you have the ECG, the electrocardiogram.
Yes.
Has it been read by the cardiologist, and what has the cardiologist said?
The cardiologist has said that his ECG from the day after his vaccine, the one we found finally at Christchurch Hospital, shows ST elevations and PR depressions consistent with pericarditis, and she has diagnosed him as vaccine-induced pericarditis. Now, here's where it gets interesting. We sent the report through to ACC, and they are still fighting us, even though the cardiologist has diagnosed him with vaccine-induced pericarditis. ACC is still refusing to cover my son.
So is your son able to work at the moment?
He is. He's permanently on a medication from his cardiologist. And she's a great cardiologist, very highly qualified. Yeah, so he's permanently on a medication called colchicine, which is given to people with pericarditis, and he has to keep taking it. Because if he stops taking it, the chest pains come back heavier, and that's how he ends up in hospital. But he has constant chest pains all the time now.
So is he likely to be on that medication for the foreseeable future?
She has said she doesn't want a 28-year-old permanently on colchicine, that's not good. And she admitted to him that, she has others like him, and they're not really, it's so new, they're not sure what to do with these people because they don't know what to do with vaccine-induced pericarditis because it's new and it acts the way it acts. And the thing is that until the government actually recognises these people and does something about it, then research can't be done into how to help people with vaccine-induced pericarditis that's ongoing, chronic, like my son.
Well, there's a couple of things here. Firstly, the government, the Ministry of Health, is still advertising for people to take COVID shots.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And secondly, it's all a bit too late now for your son, isn't it? Because somebody's got to take responsibility. Somebody's got to admit that a mistake was made. And if a cardiologist is saying that your son was injured, has this heart condition as a consequence of taking the vaccine, and we know what happened to Rory Nairn, and there's already, three or four confirmed deaths, aren't there, up and down the country because of vaccines, it is patently obvious to Blind Freddy that this thing harms people, injures people, kills people. Why the
Correct.
Hell is
Well,
the government
Rory had died still in November. Rory yeah. had died in November, and my son was vaccinated the following January.
Yeah. But so why the hell is the government still advertising, promoting this blinking stuff?
Well, how they can use the word safe and effective is beyond me, but they've got ACC actually kind of going against highly qualified cardiologists, and there's something inherently wrong. So ACC is the next one I'm going to target because there's something inherently wrong with the way they're not. I mean, it should be no question if a cardiologist goes, it's vaccine induced pericarditis. Here's the ECG that shows me the evidence that my diagnosis is correct. Then ACC should immediately accept that person, but instead they're spending thousands of dollars going through the Independent Complaint Reviews Authority, and we've been to several reviews, and that they're wasting all this money to fight people. Now, ACC have paid out $10 million to 1,600-odd cases, but there's a lot of people being turned down, and I suspect those people did not lay their hands on their ECGs, some of them that had the heart issues, Like, if it hadn't been for the fact that we went and got those ECGs that were missing and put them underneath, the cardiologist's nose, because she had on her first report, can't access blood tests, can't access ECGs, can't access ECGs, and she had it down there. And, I mean, it does make you wonder. I have put investigations in at each hospital for the lost ECGs, and there is still a lost ECG from Ashburton, which is the day he came in. There's still an ECG which is just missing. So right now, I sort of have a case against them because they're required by law to keep your ECGs for 10 years.
Precisely. So you have written to the superintendent, manager at Ashburton
Hospital? Yep, at all of the hospitals, and said, and they're now looking into it, and they sort of miraculously seem to find his ECGs in hard copies. They weren't up digitally for other doctors to see, which is not how it should be. But one of them is completely missing. And also the referral at Nelson Hospital just went missing. Like, Bailey went to his doctor and went, well, where's my referral? And the doctor went, well, I can see it in my system. But he said, in the hospital system, it's just disappeared. And he said, you're the third patient that's happened to that's got this issue. So they're disappearing people off the – I think they're disappearing people off the
referral system. What a coincidence, eh? Yeah. So tell me about, Bailey, your son's financial hardship as a consequence of what happened to him. You say
Did
he have to stop work? Was he off paid work for a while?
No, he's continued working because he's just he's a truck driver, but he has to swallow lots of anti-inflammatories to keep himself okay. That's the only thing that's working for him. And now he's on the colchicine. It's keeping it under control. Colchicine's a very strong anti-inflammatory, and it keeps it under control if he keeps taking it. So he's fine driving along, although they wouldn't want to admit that he was not fine, would they? Because they'd have to admit that he's damaged. But anyway,
drug, this colchicine, Ellie? It's fully funded by Pharmac?
Yeah, I suppose so. It's just like your normal, it's a funded thing. They actually give it to people for gout as well as pericarditis. That's the two things that it's given out for, apparently. But so he's, the road we've been down is unbelievable. I mean, I remember writing to WorkSafe at the time, saying, hey, this has happened to my son straight after a vaccine. You need to be, and they fobbed me off to Calm. We don't deal with thing. And I went, no, wait a minute, you're not hearing me. He's driving a 56-ton truck down State Highway 1. If he'd collapsed at the wheel, he could have taken out five or six cars, So it's like, I think that people who've been vaccinated straight after they've been vaccinated with a booster shouldn't be behind the wheel. They shouldn't be until they're actually cleared or whatever to be okay, or should be 48-hour wait or something, and they didn't want to hear about that, But the thing is, now we've got a positive diagnosis, so now I can go back on all of them and go, hey,
As you say, Ellie, one doesn't want to make suppositions, but you're well aware that there was a dreadful accident on State Highway 1 south of Auckland yesterday involving a truck, and it was on a motorway. All the vehicles were going in one direction.
We just don't know because
three people killed. We don't know what the heck happened, but obviously there was a major incident which involved somebody not staying in their lane. So who knows what happens? I mean, the issues you've raised here just immediately make us leap to that scenario in South Auckland yesterday. So you're talking about a real and present danger here, aren't you?
Absolutely. And, and now it's proven, now that my son actually is diagnosed as pericarditis after his vaccine-induced pericarditis, it is a proven fact that it gave it to him. So, with a physical ECG. So, and then the question comes, should people be driving after a COVID-19 vaccine, because they may get chest pains and, that could cause a real issue. And, I mean, my son was a fit 26-year-old, so what if that's actually an older truck driver, that's given it and has a heart condition already, brewing in the background? I mean, they've got to be realistic about it. But, that's the progress, and I've let the cat out of the bag now because you're the first one that I've told about his ECGs going missing from all these hospitals. So, I'm taking action on every level that I can.
Just before we move to, your dive into official channels with OIAs and the Ombudsman and the like, what about his employer? What are they called? Move Logistics. What have they said? Have they admitted that maybe they made a wrong decision by forcing him to get vaccinated?
Well, he was fired for not taking his second vaccination.
You what?
Yeah. Even though he'd been in hospital twice, they fired him for not taking his second vaccination.
Well, he doesn't work for them anymore, then, I take it.
No.
He's been trucks for somebody else.
He doesn't. Jeez. So, that's it. He took it to keep his job, It put him in an ambulance twice. Three times into emergency, once in an ambulance, and then he was fired for not taking his second vaccine.
So you're having a pop at them? I mean, because you've been described on various social media channels, Ellie, that I've read as a pit bull, somebody with, the bit between her teeth, and she's not going to stop until she gets justice and some common sense to prevail on behalf of her son. Are you having a go at the company, or are you going to
let's say it's one step at a time. Peter, shall we say that? One step at a time, and I'm looking at every single avenue that I can go down and make a complaint. So you can surmise that. We've got lost records, we've got misdiagnosis, we've got vaccine injury where there was a mandate where the person lost their job, we've got the safety of people on the road after vaccines. So there is a number of avenues that that we will go down.
Have you been to the Health and Disability Commissioner yet?
Well, that's another avenue, yeah. So all of that is an avenue and is happening. And I won't be giving up, because it's not just my son's life, it's every other vaccine-injured person's life, and there are thousands of them.
Okay. Tell us about some of the OIAs, the Official Information Act requests that you have made. To who and about what?
Yeah, so basically I've got a petition which is before Parliament, and that has a lot of OIAs in it. So there's things like OIAs, and some of them I've come across from other people's OIAs. I've got some OIAs that where I was going to MedSafe, and I was asking for the number of people seriously vaccine injured inside a 1 year period. And they came back with one answer, and then somebody else asked them on a separate OIA and they came back with a different answer. So I laid a complaint with the Ombudsman and sent both those OIAs off to show that MedSafe were giving different answers to different people. I've laid a complaint with the Ombudsman that's currently under investigation. So that's another little angle.
Yeah. How far has that got? Has the Ombudsman made any
It's under investigation with the Ombudsman now. For MedSafe giving different answers to different people over the number of people injured.
Right. What about the petition? What's the status of that?
So the petition, as people know, because there'll be a lot of the listeners who signed it. So at the time I did the petition, there was the current Royal Commission of Inquiry, or what's called Phase 1, did not cover vaccine injury and efficacy. So I set up a petition calling for a Royal Commission of Inquiry into vaccine efficacy and safety, along with the approval process of the vaccine in New Zealand. That received, 24,000 and something signatures. And at one point I had 3,000 signatures while it was in the signing process just disappear overnight. And then I was told that they disappeared because somebody signed it over and over again. But however, they have an IT rule that prevents you from signing it more than once. So I'm not quite sure how that happened. And then the other day I actually looked at it and it said 28,833. So the number of people that have signed it has been slowly moving down. But anyway, I have to laugh at these people because it's just so pathetically corrupt. So the petition right now is with Brooke Van Velden. Brooke Van Velden. It went through the petitions committee. It took me over a year to make the petitions committee accept it because they kept saying I couldn't make allegations against the medical council, and that NZDSOS's letter that it was attached to my petition had accusations against the medical council. So I got them to alter their letter and, you know, we made it questions of the medical council. They're very protective of the medical council because, let's face it, they've been busy, you know, taking any doctor off the register who so much as questioned safe and effective messaging. So, but anyway, they've got a few complaints coming their way because I figure it's time to put pressure on doctors who misdiagnosed people and who gaslit people. I think it's time for those complaints to be going in. But anyway, that's another thing. So petition on Brooke Van Velden. So once I finally got it accepted, there's 16 supplementary documents, right? There's 1,600 pages. Most petitions have the petition evidence page and a supplementary document. Mine has 16. So inside mine, I put all of the leaked Pfizer contracts. I put the documents that Pfizer tried to keep secret for 75 years from the public that were forced to release by a court thing. I put OIAs in there that were from the Justice Department, showing the Justice Department, advisors advising the government and warning them that the mandates were a breach of the Bill of Rights. I've got all of that stuff, a beautiful, huge document from Kirsten Murphitt, her Q&A document that she sent through to politicians who never responded to her. All of those documents are in there. And 220 vaccine injury stories, which Linda Fortin has up on her website if people would like to read these stories. That includes, letters from Rory Nairn's parents and from his sister, who is in fact like my son. So a lot of people don't realise that not only did this kill their older son, but it also damaged their other child as well. So there's a submission from her, which is absolutely incredible. And lots of other ones like Casey Hodgkinson, who were affected so dreadfully. Roseanne, another one from Rotorua, affected dreadfully with the neurological, all those people. So they've all made some, submissions within my petition evidence. So that is sitting on Brooke Van Velden's desk. And what I want her to do, because the one thing that the vaccine injured want more than anything is to be heard, and I want her to set up, and she has the power to do it, to set up a select committee where the vaccine injured can go and speak, and it can be filmed and it can be used on phase two of the inquiry. I've asked her to do that.
You want this to happen before phase two of the inquiry gets underway?
I want it to get underway straight away,
isn't it?
I want it to get underway straight away off the back of my petition, and then they can use that. They can use that select committee where there's a group of politicians versus a vaccinated person who's been vaccine injured telling their story. I want these politicians to sit and face these people. I want them to face the damage that this vaccine has done to New Zealanders, and for it to be filmed, and for those commissioners to have to look at story after story after story, just like Linda Fortin has to look at story after story, helping person after person, like I had to read story after story. Some of the stories were so heavy during, putting the petition together that I had to stop reading them because they were actually so upsetting to see what this vaccine had done to people. And I know there's a lot of people. My son is still partially functioning, although he can't work 5 days a week anymore. He can't hack it. There's a lot of people who can't even get out of bed, who are actually bedridden from this vaccine.
So you want a select committee before the commission phase two begins. Why don't you just wait until the commission phase two and then have the same electronic processes you've just talked about, i.e.,
because
bridge and the like? Why don't you just put your
because so far
in front of the commission?
Yeah, so far that process has not been a public process, whereas a select committee is a public process. It's like a Zoom right now with you and I looking at each other, and it's filmed and it's kept and you can go and look at it. Because I think it needs to be public. I think the inquiry needs to be more public, and I can, as the result of a petition, have a select committee. Like, the minister can call for a select committee on that thing. And I think, and just interesting, before we got on the call together, you said the media release had come out about the new
about phase two of the inquiry.
About phase two of the inquiry.
Yeah.
That's actually come out, but there's an opportunity now to get that going. And also in that press release, you'll see it barely mentions vaccine safety and efficacy. It goes on about lockdowns. It goes on about everything. And then somewhere down in the small print will be vaccine efficacy and safety, whereas my petition was only pertaining to that. And I think there needs to be that. And I think they'll find thousands of people will come forward and want to be heard and want their stories told.
I mean, I'm just looking at the press release from Brooke Van Velden, which I think came out, well, today's the 27th of August, isn't it? So it came out at 28 minutes past 7 this morning, Ellie.
Yeah.
Let me read it to you. Brook van Velden, Internal Affairs Minister, says the government has finalised the detailed terms of reference. These terms of reference reflect the decision taken by the government in June to establish phase two, blah, blah, blah. Phase two will review key decisions taken by the government in 2021 and 2022 related to the use of vaccines and the use of lockdowns. So there is a general headline there that they're going to look at the use of vaccines. But then it says phase two of the inquiry will also assess the impact of decisions taken on, you know, inflation, debt, business activity. Public hearings may be used where appropriate. By God, they're hedging their bets, aren't they? Grant Illingworth KC has been appointed chair of phase two. I think that appointment was known before. He joined the inquiry in July to support the final stages of phase one, and he'll assist the inquiry transitioning to phase two. And then there's two other commissioners that have been appointed, both of whom are not known to me, Judy Kavanagh and Anthony Hill. One apparently is an economist, the other is a public health expert. But there's no specific reference there, Ellie, to vaccine harm, vaccine efficacy, vaccine safety. It's all just sort of broad brush, isn't it? And it seems as if they're more worried about the blinking economic impact than the health impact.
No, they're more worried about burying the vaccine injured and burying the safety of the vaccine. That's what they're burying. And so that's why my petition was always just for safety and efficacy, because I knew they would try to avoid those words, you know?
Yeah. I'm intrigued by something you said before also. You said you've got the Pfizer contracts and the Pfizer research, which was supposed to be buried for 75 years. We know that a lot of that has come to light in the States anyway. But the Pfizer contracts, which we know are not public in this country, have you got some of the other Pfizer contracts which have mysteriously...
Yes, South African one was released by the courts over there, and some of the others have been leaked. So I just put those, they're available online. You know, so I actually just put the full copies.
Those have been available for 3 years. I seem to remember back in 2021, there was one of all places from Albania.
And ones in there.
That's a cut case of a country, so we don't believe that. But of course, we've got to realise that these contracts are probably carbon copies across the globe, aren't they?
Correct, they all match.
What's going on in one country will be the same as in another.
They match. The clauses are exactly the same. In all of the leaked contracts, the clauses are the same numbers, same clauses. There's really no difference apart from, you know, the who signed it. But I know you probably will have Kirsten Murford on there, and she's starting up a citizens referendum as well she's got a one going right now, a Pfizer contract, to release the New Zealand Pfizer contract, a petition, so people should go look that up and sign it. Mm. And then she's got a citizens-based referendum to withdraw from the WHO. So there's some really good action out there from other people as well, and I think everybody's just got to keep pushing. Eventually we're going to push it out into the open. And we're looking at that press release without having read it, but just hearing what you've said about it, it seems to me that they're already belittling and pushing down the vaccine safety and efficacy, even in the phase two of this inquiry. So, you know, to me, it's exactly why I did this petition in the first place, because it was excluded.
It's a case, though, Ellie, isn't it, of the little person fighting the establishment? How much time, how much energy, how much effort can you put into this?
Lots, because they've hurt my son and I will never forgive them, and I will go to my grave until I see people recognised. Occasionally I go and look at stuff on thalidomide to remind myself how hard the thalidomide victims had to fight. And, you know, I mean, I'm in my 60s, so a lot of people maybe don't realise that, but, you know, people were born without arms and legs. It took years for them to take thalidomide off the market. And what many people don't know is it's still being used in Africa for leprosy. And they tell the Africans not to have, you know, sex while they're taking it or have children. And there's still children being born without arms and legs. And that company, it took them 20 or 30 years to issue an apology to the people it hurt. You know, these pharmaceutical companies, You know, everything that happens leads into it. It's just a little bit like Robert F. Kennedy and Trump joining hands. I mean, if they do get in and Kennedy does get in there and start cleaning out the FDA and the CDC, that will be the beginning, because we take our lead from them. People sort of go, oh, it's America. What does that matter? Well, it matters a hell of a lot, because the Ministry of Health takes its lead from the FDA and the CDC. And those places are basically financed by the pharmaceutical companies, and they have a revolving door where people work in a pharmaceutical company and then they come in and they work for the CDC and then they go out and work for a pharmaceutical company. It's just a revolving door of pharmaceutical executives. And as long as that happens, we'll never be able to push back. So I think it's really great what's happening in the States. There's a chance right now.
There's a chance, but it's all about fighting the money, isn't it? Because the pharmaceutical industry, in the last 5 years especially, I suspect, has become the biggest industry in America. In fact, I heard a podcast last week featuring a woman called Casey Means, who's a Stanford medical graduate, a Stanford-educated surgeon who's given up her career because she sees America becoming more and more unhealthy. And she and her brother, who was a lobbyist for both the food and the pharmaceutical industry before he also saw the light, these two are now campaigning furiously to get Americans to eat more healthily and to stay well for longer. And they made to me the most staggering claim, and I've no doubt it's true. They said the biggest industry in America right now is healthcare.
Oh, yeah.
You think about that. We think it might be the tech industry. It might be, you know, Facebook and Google and the like, or it might be, not so much now, but certainly in days gone by, the car industry. But no, the biggest industry in America is healthcare, and right at the forefront of that is the pharmaceutical industry.
Right at the forefront of their income is vaccination. Vaccination has been the number one thing for them for 20 years. So it's like that's how they make most of their money.
Well, what this particular podcast said, Elliot, I know we're getting off the track here, but they said, you know, when you and I were kids in the 50s and 60s, we had a childhood vaccine schedule whereby you had a vaccine for measles and a vaccine for diphtheria or whatever. I think there were two or three shots that you were supposed to have to remain healthy. Tetanus was another one. But heaven forbid, apparently now there's about 100 vaccines on this schedule, and kids are supposed to be getting vaccinated basically from the day they're born.
They're vaccinated for hepatitis B on the day they are born. So it's crazy.
Does that happen in New Zealand as well?
I believe we do. I mean, our schedule's probably not quite as heavy as some parts of the US. I know California's really heavy, and of course it has the highest rates of childhood illnesses, you know. So, I mean, it's a crazy world we live in, Peter, but we have to stand up and people, I encourage people, you might not have as much time or energy as I've put into this, but even if it's just a letter to the Ministry of Health or a letter to the paper or whatever, everybody in this movement that's standing up against this and standing up for the vaccine injured, just take one little effort, do one little effort a week, you know? Sue Gray says to me, I try to do one OIA a week, you know, one official information request a week.
Other thing that has occurred to me many times over the last 3 years, 4 years since vaccine mandates came in is that not that long ago, as soon as there was just the merest hint of an injury or a harm from a drug, and not talking about a vaccine, but just a pill, some kind of prescription medication, or even an off-the-shelf medication, as soon as there was the merest hint that it might be carcinogenic or might have impacts on your health or whatever, withdrawn. Take it away, put in the rubbish heap and not able to be purchased. With this vaccine, we've actually had coroner's decisions saying this person died, Rory Nairn died, because of the vaccine. Other people have died because of the vaccine. Yet we're still promoting it as being something worthwhile. This is a proven killer substance, yet we're still putting it into people's arms. I mean, what sort of nation are we, Ellie?
Yeah, it's a bit of a worry. And, you know, the thing is that they got that whole thing approved. And you remember people will remember that Trump at the time said about hydroxychloroquine, and we have ivermectin. And they got it approved through the process through emergency use authorization. And the reason they could do that was only if there was not a treatment for the disease. And that's why they came down so heavily on anybody that suggested a treatment. Because if there was a treatment, they would not get, emergency use authorization. And that's it. And I mean, it's just been a fair campaign. And, you know, in the media in New Zealand, I mean, as a music publicist, I've dealt with them all of my life, you know, like, and what I've seen them turn into is unbelievable. They've just turned into a pharmaceutical company pushing machine. But then if you happen to go to the likes of stuff or whatever, and you click on it, you will see pharmaceutical adverts come straight out. So they're obviously being rewarded for their behaviour. You know, I try not to go there. I try not to actually hit on their sites at all anymore. So I try not to give them any hits because they're just, you know, they don't deserve it.
Yeah, well, at least New Zealand broadcast television isn't as bad as the US, and you would have seen the montages put together over the last 3 or 4 years of all the news programs, you know, sponsored by Pfizer, brought to you by Pfizer, this segment brought to you by Merck or by Pfizer, you know. So the pharmaceutical industry in America is the biggest advertiser on broadcast television.
And no, but the press releases that have come out have clearly been in lockstep, because you go across all the media outlets and they say exactly the same words. So they're really lockstep in their messaging. That they're putting out in their news programs. And, I mean, that's it. Always advertising was kept, you know, they tried to keep advertising separate from news. It was a thing. You couldn't say, well, I'm spending money with you advertising, so you need to put my artist on the TV because I'm spending money with you. You were not allowed to do that because you were not allowed to cross the never shall the twain meet. You know, you were not allowed to go, you put my artist on TV because I'm spending money on TV ads with you, or the same with radio. But seems that they don't have those rules for the pharmaceutical companies. So,
to be honest, Ellie, and you will know this as well, to be honest, and having worked in both radio and television for quite a while, that's not quite true. They were prepared to put your artists on the TV give them a live performance on breakfast if you spend some money promoting their concert.
It depends if they were tied to a major record company or not.
Okay.
And major record companies are tied to the same people that own the pharmaceutical companies, which is what a lot of people don't realise. They go, oh, that artist's a sellout, and yet you're still adding the Foo Fighters or whatever to your playlist. You know, those artists are owned by the same people who own the pharmaceutical companies. That's why that's not a mistake that they're out there selling the vaccine. They're selling the vaccine because they're contracted to do whatever they're told.
Just so murky world of corporate politics, eh?
Different if it's an independent artist, then you wouldn't get that. But if you were a major artist, you would get that.
Yeah. Ellie, let's get back then to your issue. You've got your petition. You want a select committee. What chance do you think of it happening? Has there been any response to your petition at all?
She has acknowledged my request, and I will say, and I might as well say it, that I have spoken to Tanya Unkevich in the last 2 days, and I've asked her to speak to Brooke about it.
Yeah.
So I have asked for that communication, and so she wrote to me last night. She arrived in Wellington and said that she was going to go and talk to her.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. What's your feeling about New Zealand First, bearing in mind that they picked up quite a lot of votes from people like yourself, I suppose, from people like myself as well, because of, you know, their supposed interest at the time in vaccine injuries and getting a proper health inquiry into the COVID response. Tanya Unkevich was one of the MPs in New Zealand First who was, you know, pushing that case hard. Do you believe that NZ First have done what they promised? Have they been as firm as you would have liked them to be?
They are in a coalition with other people, and National couldn't care less about the vaccine injured, I'll tell you that much. He doesn't react to that.
That's painfully obvious. Well, there's lots of things that National couldn't care less about.
I think they've tried, and I think Tanya might be a little bit like our Rennick or our, you know, Andrew Bridgen, you know what I mean? Like she's starting to speak up and do what she can. But we need more of that, and we need more of the actual politicians to wake up to the reality of vaccine injury. And that is why I want some of them sitting there while they have to listen to the stories of those who have injured and how seriously it has impacted their lives. They need to realise people are hurt badly, and there are thousands of them in New Zealand hurt badly, not hundreds, but thousands. And that is the only way I feel like. My son often says I'm like walking evidence, Mum. Like, people react differently to him when he says, oh, you know, you had heart condition, oh, you went to hospital, oh, yeah, I'm vaccine injured. You know, and they like, they don't know. It's like when you, you know, you might have friends over and you say, oh, yeah, oh, how's, you know, how's Bailey? Oh, you know, he's been in hospital with his heart and he's been vaccine injured. Like, if you said he'd broken his leg or something, they'd be like, oh, that's terrible. I hope he heals up or whatever. You know, but their reaction with vaccine injury is like, oh, and they just get this blank look come over their face and they might go, oh, it's a nice sunny day out there today, you know? So it's kind of like the reaction of people is not normal. And I think that these politicians are basically thinking that they did the right thing and they saved people's lives. But it's not like one person's taken, you know, I mean, Sean Plunkett said to me, your son took a hit for the team. He also took a hit he also took a hit on the list, but, you know, a hit for the team, it's not appropriate. It's not fair that one, and the thing is, it's thousands of people have taken a hit for the team. Not one, thousands, you know. So they need to realise, and let's face it, those politicians, apart from their advisors, they've not seen it on the news. They've not seen vaccine injury stories on the news or what's happened to people. So how can they know that people are injured? How they can know is where they have to sit straight opposite them and see what's happened, you know, and hear what's happened. And that's why I think it's really important that there is an open forum that is filmed, that is covered, that shows vaccine injury and what it has done to people's lives.
Is Linda Wharton still collecting stories?
Absolutely. She still has people that come forward. And I think as the stories come out, and this is probably why they don't want them out there, then more people go, oh, maybe that was what was wrong with me, you know? So there's more people that are waking up to the health issues that they've had since the vaccine as being associated with the vaccine. And that was why, you know, Linda has done an incredible job. She is she deserves a knighthood, that woman, or damehood or whatever. She's just, she helps those people every day, you know, and there are still people coming in who are injured. You'd have to ask her on that more than me. But, you know, I really think that we have to get it out there public, because as more people hear it, then more people come forward. And that's why this messaging about if you had chest pain and you were fobbed off, go get your ECG, go take it to a cardiologist and get a cardiologist to look at that ECG, because then that's another formally diagnosed person. So then more people will do that, because I suspect there's a lot of people like my son who were fobbed off, whose ECGs actually showed ST elevation and PR depression in the head. They actually had pericarditis at the time.
Mm. And you still remain highly suspicious about missing ECGs. I would have thought in this day and age with computers, yes, cloud storage, with everybody having a NH number, a national health number, that just should not happen, should it? It should be interchangeable. There should be a computer system by everybody in the country's health records is readily available.
That's why I want people to go and ask for their ECGs as well, because I want to know if there's other people who have got missing ECGs. I want to know if my son's the only one, or if that's, you know, and I mean, if it was one ECG from one hospital, but it wasn't.
Yeah, that's the staggering part of the story, isn't it? That he lost them from pretty much every provincial hospital in the South Island.
Correct. You know, I mean, I'm not saying it's intentional, and I know I've been loud and I've put out the petition, but the other thing I've asked for is an IT printout under the Privacy Act across all those hospitals of everybody that has accessed my son's medical records since the date of his vaccine to now. And I'm waiting for that. And what I do know is one of the records girls told me that 26 different people had accessed my son's Christchurch records.
Seems a lot of people, Ellie, just saying.
Does seem a lot of people. So I'll be looking forward to knowing their roles, their names, the government departments that they work for.
And you think you can get that information?
Well, Bailey's entitled to it under the Privacy Act. You're entitled to know who's accessed your medical records and what they've done while they've been inside your medical records.
Looks like there's a bit to go in this story yet, Ellie.
Yeah.
Keep the fight going.
I say it with a smile on my face.
Keep the fight going.
Because really, these people are a joke.
Yeah.
You know? A bad joke, but a joke nonetheless.
How's the music business been going on a brighter note?
Oh, busy, busy, busy. So we've finished the Highwaymen tour, highly successful, 20
how's
dates.
How's Eddie Lowe, by the way? How's his health?
Not good.
Not good?
No.
No, that's sad.
No, not good.
Great no. veteran, great, really.
Yes, he had to retire from this tour. And
Icon of New Zealand entertainment, isn't he?
Absolutely amazing. And just an amazing, amazing human being, funny as anything. And, well, he had to retire from this tour, so we took Frankie Stevens along instead. And it was highly successful. And now I'm just working with my independent artists as I do, so a few young artists releasing stuff out there this week. So, yeah, I still do that work every day. So I'll be going off this Zoom and off to work, writing press releases and sending out for radio interviews with various Australian stations because I work both sides of the Tasman with my partner. So, yeah, that goes, you know, it's going along. But I'm enjoying being back on the farm, actually, Pete. I'm enjoying not actually facing hundreds of people every day. Or thousands, good. Actually. Yeah.
Ellie, as always, a pleasure talking to you. Keep up the good fight. And we look forward to further developments in your story, eh?
I'm sure there'll be some. Thank you, Pete. Thanks very much.